Victory denying impressive Knicks. Stadge gets the sack. Lecky's back while the Socceroos prepare for their Uzbek test in the round of 16. Welcome to the Daily Football Show powered by Square Knot Insider, a podcast produced by us here at Podular Media about entrepreneurs, investors and innovators and the stories behind the legacies they built. Adrian Beaker-Horton with you, Joel Freebie-Frushi, Tony TP2-Pasolia and Rob the Big Beef Crawford.
Hello.
Well, let's just get into it. We'll preview the show in a little bit, but off the top, oh my God. And I legitimately just want to speak about Alan Stadic and this.
What a weekend.
I know. Yeah. This shock to the system for everyone that's involved in Australian football and, of course, everyone's favourite, the Matildas. Getting the sack in what have to be deemed as controversial circumstances just before the Women's World Cup, of course, mid-year this year. Tony, I'm going to throw the floor to you because you've been very across this story and it has been increasingly difficult for a lot of people, even some of the most revered journalists in Australian football, to wrap their brain around exactly what's happening. There's been a hell of a lot of rhetoric and dialogue on Twitter and the like, and I'm scratching my head, but I believe you've boiled it down constructively and I'd love to hear your views.
I think we're all shocked by what's happened over the weekend. And look, I'll preface everything that I say from this point forward as I'm just as in the dark as every other journalist who, and there are no doubt some journalists who know a little more than they're letting on. But I don't know the situation personally at hand. I can only speak to the experiences that I've had in some 15 odd years in the industry. And I guess what informs my response to the Matilda situation stems from one of the questions asked at the media conference on Saturday afternoon, one which was posed, I guess, if any of the findings from FFA's investigation were fueled by the Me Too movement, you know, as if any hint of that would add to the clickbait associated with coverage of that narrative. While David Gallop may have been really stern in his response in suggesting there was no validity to those claims, I think the reaction from the football media and the greater football community in general has been a perfect illustration of Me Too at its very foundation. While some men in the industry have been really quick to question FFA's decision, chasing every tasty morsel of information they can lay their hands on, it's been the response from the women in football which highlights how much ground we still have to cover when it comes to respect in the sporting industry. I was moved by a comment which football journalist Anna Harrington made in reference to the harrowing murder of a woman simply going about her day last week. Men, please don't spend this time getting defensive or telling women how to act and feel. Just listen to us. And while the nature of those words were inspired by something far more telling than any of us can bear to imagine, they are perfectly relatable in this instance. Here we have an organisation in FFA that asked its workforce, predominantly women in this instance, to provide feedback on their workplace environment. We asked them under the protection of anonymity, without fear of reprisal or repercussion, and we did listen. We listened and we took action. Action which 10, maybe even 5 years ago, would not have been as forthcoming. I've worked in various roles in the sporting industry over the past 15 years and have witnessed more than I would be willing to admit in a public forum. Bullying, misogyny, sexual harassment, mental disintegration, you name it, I've seen it. I've watched my fellow colleagues being put in situations that no employee should be placed in. I've seen them escalate genuine concerns to senior management, to CEOs, to boards, and have seen little, if any, action taken. In one such scenario, an instance that was clear grounds for dismissal, it was simply waved away with nothing more than a warning. Sport has been slow to move when it comes to respect for our women in the workplace. These environments preside over a toxic culture which offers women no other alternative but to move on to other jobs, lost to other industries, worse still, in some cases, to unemployment. When you have no confidence that you are being listened to, that your concerns are met with genuine empathy and a willingness to accept your word as a mere starting point to take affirmative action, what other choice do women have? In the case of the Matildas and their associated hierarchy, they are at the pinnacle of their sport. There is no other job to go to. There is no other industry to fall back on. When something is not quite right, when behaviour extends beyond the boundaries society deems appropriate, we must listen. And if the clinical action taken by FFA on Friday is the ultimate outcome, so be it. We can question how the news was delivered, why the players weren't at least afforded an opportunity to sit with the news before it was communicated to the broader football community. And sure, we may point to a number of Matildas who have suggested their shock at the dismissal of Australia's head coach. We may even point to some of these comments as support for their former mentor. But if this process allowed just one voice to be heard, a voice which may have been suppressed under normal circumstances, then shouldn't we listen to that voice, no matter how difficult the outcome may be? I'll leave you with another quote, this time from Lieutenant General David Morrison, a senior officer in the Australian Army who addressed the International Women's Day Conference in 2013. The standard you walk past is the standard you accept. The FFA has set a standard, something it may not have done under past administrations. Maybe it's time that some of the men who work in this industry follow suit.
Tony, very powerful words and very well delivered, I must say. Joel, I'll refer to you, mate. We'll loop you into the Daily Football Show on a Monday.
Yes.
Interesting news coming out about the environment. And there was a survey. Surveys, correct. And they were deemed unsatisfactory. That's a really interesting sticking point out of this situation.
Yeah, so the team environment, based on the results of that, were deemed as unsatisfactory. Since we've seen a few Matildas come out, well, to be fair, most of them, and support Stadge on social media, but I guess the plot really thickened even more, if it wasn't thick enough already today, a report from the Daily Telegraph, which suggested that an unnamed group of Matildas, and we don't know how many that is, I should also add, are going to demand Stadge be reinstated. So, okay. I mean, it's a very sticky situation. And, I mean, clearly we don't know the whole story yet. And I think there's a lot more water to go under the bridge. I think when sort of people... you know, I saw in the post-mortem that, you know, people were like, oh, you know, FFA ruining another... tilted a World Cup. I think it's probably about more than that, as you said, Tony. It's about a lot more than that, potentially. But I think at this point, we shouldn't be blaming FFA just yet. Clearly, as you said, Tony, they felt that they had reason to make this move. So it's important to consider that. And I'd urge people just to think about more than the football side of things. So look, it's a big issue. There's a lot to unpack. And I guess time will tell and will reveal more facts about this story.
Well said. I think we're better off just waiting, being patient, and then we get the full details of what has transpired potentially in the coming weeks, and then people will allow themselves the opportunity to speak to this with a little bit more authority and clout.
If I could just leave one last point. Tony made a great point off air when we had a chat before. Chris Nicker, who's now in charge of the FFA, used to be a lawyer.
Still is.
And still is a lawyer. Mm. Something like this wouldn't happen without there being considerable grounds for it to actually happen. So there's, you know, something obviously has happened, which is why this is the case, rather than all those people calling it an FFA conspiracy online. So, I think that's just the point we should all remember.
Put yourself in FFA shoes. They didn't want to do this 5 months out of a World Cup.
No. Absolutely not.
This is the last thing they'd want to be doing.
Absolutely.
So continuity is everything. And the other thing is, as much as we love the Socceroos, I hate to say it, everyone, but the Socceroos will never be close to winning a World Cup. Yet these girls have an opportunity, Tony. So to unsettle the apple cart, so to speak, so close to a World Cup is just so deflating and frustrating for us as massive supporters of the Matildas. Like, they're the it sporting team in a women's sense, and not even in a women's sense. They are the sporting team across both genders.
I'd be intrigued to see if the narrative that's coming out of the squad, because we've obviously seen a number of Matildas tweet their you could call it support, but, you know, obviously thanking Stadge for his efforts over the last 5 years. But they went into camp today, and part of doing that was really addressing this head on. So I'll be intrigued to see if that narrative changes over the next couple of days, and whether once players – and it probably – I'll relate this to a circumstance that I had at Hockey Australia where we did sack our head coach, so it's in an odd set of circumstances. But the players were actually given an opportunity to sit with that news for at least a day before it was released to the general public. So it's unfortunate that in some respects, that's probably the one area that I would question FFA, is that they probably needed to get those Matildas, whether it was through, you know, we have the technology to get them all on board in one environment. And I'm sure there has been dialogue amongst those girls prior to engaging FFA today. But I would have been on the front foot and said, really gone to them and say, look, this is what's happening. Be prepared for it, because, you know, clearly it's a hot topic. And it, you know, it was one of the biggest news items over the weekend. It's put the Socceroos on the back page, unfortunately. I mean, I forgot that we were actually playing tonight.
So do I. Yeah. I said that before. I thought we were playing on Wednesday morning. I just haven't been as I guess linked into the Socceroos as I normally am. Like, this has overshadowed absolutely everything. It's got everyone talking as well, because we all hold the hope that the Matildas might be able to get the job done over there in France. We legitimately believe that this team could be crowned world champions, and it would be a massive fillip for not only women's football, just the game in general.
Yeah.
And that's why we love this team, and we've loved seeing them grow, especially over the last 2 years, and take it to some of the best nations in world football. So for this to happen so close to the start of this major tournament is deflating, as I've said. But we'll learn more about it, and I will preview the show because we've got the women's game chief editor Cheryl Downs joining us. So certainly we're going to learn a little bit more about Stadge and this exit. Also, the good, bad and the undecided, of course, with Goal Australia journo Josh Thomas. So that'll be a good one. He's a debutant fresh.
Yes, he is. Yeah. Well, we had Kieran Francis on late last year, and we've developed a bit of a good rapport with the Goal guys. So I thought to turn to Josh this time.
Beautiful. The Goal goals. now, Square Not Insider, just another reminder for people that love their business or startups, technology, innovation. Subscribe to that podcast who have backed us for the remainder of the Asian Cup. It's Square Not Insider via iTunes, Spotify, and the Google podcasting app. And don't forget to get DFS Direct into your inboxes. Joel's doing a fantastic job with that. So if you want to read or get up to date with everything Daily Football Show on a daily basis, Monday to Friday, then make sure you head to our Facebook page by searching Daily Football Show and hit the sign up button. Right, Australian Podcast Awards as well, Big Beef.
Yep, get on there, vote for us. Some of the other contenders, I guess you could say, are starting to pile on the votes. So I think we're up to about 41 votes, which means a lot of you out there listening who haven't voted. So get on australianpodcastawards.com.au, sports and recreation, vote for the Daily Football Show. It's very easy to sign up. It's not that difficult. Just register your email, click yes, vote for us.
to use a Napoleon Dynamite reference, we are Pedro.
Yes, we are Pedro. Vote for Pedro.
Righto. Now, Matt Leckie, let's talk about the Socceroos because they've got a round of 16 clash tonight, 1 a.m. Australian Eastern Daylight Time, so that's Tuesday morning to be specific. Leckie, he's been declared fit to play for the Socceroos. Graham Arnold confirmed this. When, Frush, on the weekend?
Yeah, overnight. So did his media rounds probably in the early hours of the morning, I'd say, our time. But yeah, this is a good one to hear.
And what are we expecting? Matt Leckie to potentially come into that number nine position or maybe to continue with Jamie McLaren? We've got Apu Gianu, who's shown some really good signs coming off the bench. It's a bit of a healthy conundrum, boys.
Well, I think I can't see Matt Leckie playing much more than a cameo in this position. I think Arnie himself actually confirmed that in his media conference that it would be at most a cameo off the bench if he's needed. Hopefully, I suppose we can wish that we'll be out of sight against the Uzbeks and we maybe won't need Matthew Leckie. That'd be a great situation, I think. Or even if he comes on with, say, 5 minutes of regulation to go, 10 minutes if we're in a winning position and, you know, he gets a bit of a run around just to sort of get a bit of sharpness back in him. But I think even if he was raring to start, I don't think there's probably a place for him in the starting 11 at the moment. I think it's too late probably to throw him at number nine. I think the chance for experimentation has gone and probably evaporated when he did go down injured. I think that was probably one of the big misfortunes of him getting injured at the time he did. Given what we know about what Arnie had planned for him, he could have maybe thrown him up front, potentially against Jordan or even against Oman in that friendly. No doubt in the Oman game. But Chris Economides and Awa Mabil really are in pretty much an undroppable form at the moment. I mean, Mabil's got two goals. Economides has one goal and four assists. So you can't really drop either of them. So look, I think Leckie coming off the bench is really the obvious way of going about things.
Let's have a listen to Jamie McLaren on the squad's confidence.
I feel like the squad's so confident, whether it's, you know, from start to finish, we're always creating chances, we're always scoring goals. And I think that was people were talking about how we wouldn't create chances and score goals, but we've done that and the squad's confident, mate, and we're really looking forward to Monday.
Beautiful, J-Mac.
Buzzword, confident.
Yes, absolutely. Will he start?
All about us.
Who knows?
Done.
Let's just go around let's go around the room quickly because it's going to be a long show if we continue to waffle on, and we want to have a great chat to Cheryl Downs, of course. So, lads, who starts up front? Let's go around the room. Big Beef.
I would like to see Apu Gianu starting. Yeah.
You're a bit delayed today. That's okay.
Always.
Tony?
It's Monday.
I think Melbourne City's new signing, Jamie McLaren, will start.
Oh, he's called it early. Yeah. I like that.
Mm. I'm going with Jamie McLaren just because I was pretty pleased with the way we played against Syria. And with that said, I'd keep changes to a minimum, though I think it's likely that we're going to see Mark Milligan go back into midfield with Trent Sainsbury back in.
Okay, I'm going to go with Rob. I think Apu Gianu.
I thought you were going to say me. I'm not starting. No chance.
Split jury.
I think he's shown enough off the bench. I was really impressed in the last match day. So I think he might get the nod. Jamie McLaren has been serviceable, a little bit better than he was in his previous 7 or 8 caps where he was almost non-existent. And I'm a big fan of Jamie McLaren. I just think Apu Gianu, for me personally, is just showing more than enough. And it's a flip of the coin. Let's be frank about that. So anyway, we'll see what happens. Asian Cup results. Jordan 1, Vietnam 1. Vietnam won 4-2 on penalties. Thailand 1, China 2. The might and power of China starting to make their mark.
Mm.
And then Iran 2 against Oman, who were nil.
No surprise there.
No surprise. So we've got one last 8 match confirmed in the quarterfinals, and that'll be China up against Iran. That'll be an interesting battle for us.
Yeah, it will be, but I think overall Iran are going to have too much quality. Yeah, I'm still not really convinced by China yet. You know, they've got some good players in there, but, you know, they've had some pretty poor moments so far this tournament. Potentially you could maybe lay that down to, you know, a bit of rustiness, a bit of early nerves, particularly against Kyrgyzstan, which was the first game of the tournament. But I think Iran are going to be too good.
Now, I won't read out the A-League results because everyone listening to this podcast will know them anyway. But I will read out one W-League result, which was fascinating, and that's Adelaide losing against Western Sydney Wanderers, the Cellar Dwellers, 4-1, Tony.
It's almost like Adelaide reprised last season's form in that particular game. Yeah. But that I saw them, I think they dropped from 2nd to 6th in one foul swoop. So, and the Wanderers, and we were just speaking about how inept they were as a entity last week, and sure enough, we fired up a rocket up their butts, and yep. There you go, 4-1.
I know, great work. Anyway, let's get out of here and let's get back to the football with Josh Thomas after the break, the Goal Australia journo, who's going to take us through the good, bad and undecided of the A-League round.
You're listening to The Daily Football Show, the voice of Australian football.
Hey guys, Beaker here. We know you love football, but if you also love business, startups, technology and innovation, then you're in luck. SquareNot Insider, produced by us here at Podular Media, is an engrossing listen with big names like Cedric Fuchs from Charter Hall, Chris Ridd, the former MD of Xero, John Kroll, the former CEO of Accenture, plus some of the brains behind some of Australia's emerging tech startups. If this tickles your fancy, then subscribe to the SquareNot Insider podcast via iTunes, Spotify, and the Google Podcasting app. SquareNot Insider, a show about entrepreneurs, innovators, investors, and the legacies they build. Produced by Podular Media. Welcome back to the Daily Football Show on a Monday, reviewing everything that happened over the weekend. And we're going to turn our attention to the A-League. And we've got a debutant on, Josh Thomas, the Goal Australian journalist, joins us. Welcome, mate.
Thanks for having me on the show, mate.
Mate, great to have you on. Before we do get you on, tell us a little bit about yourself. You're doing some work for Goal Australia, who have been around for a long time. And, of course, we know Kieran Francis pretty well, and we bumped into him in Russia, and he's a bit of a larrikin. And It's always great to speak to a writer as well, it must be said, because for myself and Joel, that's how we started out in the industry. So what about you, Josh? How did you get into it all?
Yeah, well, you know, writing for Goal Australia, it's a dream come true. I've been doing it for nearly a year now, full time as well. You know, there's not many of those jobs going around, so living the dream pretty much. I'm only 22, so I was really lucky. I sort of finished university. I was freelancing with this company that obviously owns Goal.com. They wanted a full-time person to come on board, and I was more than willing to jump on board. I've been writing, I guess, about football since I was about 16, when I sort of realized that journalism was something I wanted to do, so I did a bit of work for the Raw.com, jumped up between all these different sites. So loving every minute of being able to write about Australian football.
Beautiful work, mate. And I can already tell you're very adept in terms of how you convey yourself as well. But the nitty gritties, where do your football allegiances lie? Because this is the sticking point. Hopefully, you know, for my sake, hopefully it's not Melbourne Victory. Hopefully it's not Man United. Have I ticked those two boxes?
Yeah, mine's a little bit different. in terms of the European leagues, I'm a Sunderland fan.
Sunderland?
And that was before the Netflix series as well. It's been a very difficult few years for me, you know, seeing them relegated twice in succession. But, you know, it's sort of a different team. You know, everyone else has got, you know, the Man United and Liverpool. So I'm very proud to be a Sunderland fan.
Beautiful work. What about the A-League? Do you go for a team?
Yeah, Wanderers fan since day one. I'm one of those that was never really convinced by Sydney SC to support them. Wanderers came along. I used to be able to walk to the stadium when it was in Parramatta, so that's where my allegiance lies there.
Beautiful work. All right, let's get stuck into it. The good, bad and undecided of the A-League round. Let's kick started on a positive note. What was your good for the round, Josh?
Yeah, well, I can't get past yesterday's game, mate, between Victory and Wellington. Yeah. I think the commentator kept saying, is this, you know, a grand final precursor? And if this is what we get at the end of the season, I think we'll all be very happy. I mean, just to see two quality teams putting it all on the line for 3 points, it was just great to see. Obviously, we had 6 goals, which always helps, but I think even if this was just a 1-1 game, it would be one of the best games of the season. Just the reactive nature of it as well, I think it was really great to see. Obviously, the Knicks, you know, they came out of the blocks firing, couldn't get the goal. Victory counts, grabbed the opener. And then, you know, season's gone by. That would be, you know, curtains for Wellington. They would drop their heads, probably concede 4 or 5 more goals. But under Mark Rudin, they're a different beast completely. They grabbed that equaliser, score a further 2 goals up, and 3-1 at half time. Credit to Melbourne Victory for coming back. But, yeah, it was a game that gave us a lot and two teams that will be at the right end of the table come the end of the season.
Yeah, it was great to see. And I think what really impresses me, boys, is that this is probably the second time this season that for a good chunk of the game, Wellington Phoenix have really outdone Melbourne Victory tactically, I think. And I think it speaks volumes about what Mark Rudin has done with Wellington Phoenix in his own tactical now. So I think what's surprising for me, Josh, is not so much the job he's doing, but sort of how quickly he's been able to implement his ideas and his philosophies on this Wellington Phoenix team. So is it a bit the same for you? Like, did you expect them to be in this position after 14 weeks?
Yeah, no, definitely not. It's taken me by surprise completely. I think considering just how much Wellington have struggled over the past few seasons, obviously they had a new coach last season who couldn't get them going. It's great to see Mark Rudin get the job done. I think a big thing for him was getting the backing from the club before he even took the position. And I think that's showing now. I think all the players, you know, they are definitely bought into his philosophy from day one, and it's paying off now.
I think to add to that point, what's impressed me about this fixture as well is that both coaches are prepared to go head-to-head with their philosophy and their mentality. So it'll be interesting to see what the third encounter in Wellington will achieve going forward. But in terms of your bad, Josh, what was something that really, I guess, didn't float the boat over the weekend?
Yeah, it's got to be Melbourne City this time. Just, you know, no shots on target against Perth Glory. It's a damning stat. And when you've got a player as good as Bruno Fornarola just sitting there in the stands, it just frustrates me. As a football fan, you want to see the best players playing. And for a club like City that are struggling to attract fans, I mean, they only had 6,000 at Amy Park on Saturday night. It's just, you know, you want to pull your hair out, really, when you've got such a good player there in the stands. And then City, who can't get a shot on target, you know, are playing a very disappointing brand of football right now. It's just very frustrating to see.
Fair enough. It was one of the most boring games you're ever likely to see. I think Perth Glory, for the most part, would have been okay with a point. It was made a lot better considering that Victory bottled it yesterday against Wellington Phoenix. But credit where it's due, and, you know, great stuff by Victory to come back into that game. But I thought they were desperately lucky to even get a point. I think Wellington Phoenix should have put them away with a few chances they had end of the first half and early the second half. But that was an absolute pearler of a game. To wrap up, Josh, what was your undecided? What was something that maybe had you a little bit confused?
Yeah, for me, Marcus Babbel, his tactics on Friday night, obviously wasn't helped by a number of injuries, suspensions and the like, so he really had to dig deep into his Wanderers squad and, you know, get a starting 11 out there. But he started for the first time this season with two wing-backs, and at each position he had two very young players in Cordier and Russell on either side. And in that first 45 minutes, you know, you got Craig Goodwin and Scott Galloway, two A-League veterans, just tearing them apart. You know, the first goal, they just tore them apart down that left flank, and they did it a number of times. So tactically, Babbel just got playing wrong. He changed it in the second half, and the Wanderers were a lot more competitive. So, you know, in terms of Marcus Babbel on the whole, I'm just not really convinced by him as yet. Obviously not helped by those injuries, you know, the stadium struggles as well. But he's just a coach that I haven't yet made a decision on. You know, we talked about Mark Rudin earlier. He's hit the ground running in Wellington. Babbel hasn't done the same. You know, he hasn't been awful. But, you know, five games in a row now, I think questions definitely have to be asked about him.
Yeah, well said. I think Babbel is a bit of an unknown quantity for me, because when I look at the season as a whole for Wanderers, I sort of see Marcus Babbel as kind of cleaning up the mess that was left behind in a lot of ways by Josip Gombau. And we've asked a few sort of journos and pundits and analysts and whatever you like, Josh, about, so I guess, the legacy that was left behind by Josip Gombau. And I suppose as a journo and as a Wanderers fan as well, I guess the two hand in hand. What are your thoughts on that whole situation about, I guess, that this clearly the writing was on the wall for Josip, yet he was allowed to bring players in. So I'm pretty confused by that. And obviously we don't know the inner workings of the club, but I mean, is that something that you sort of look back on and scratch your head and say, well, you know, if the club was so strongly considering a change of manager, then, you know, why was that allowed to happen?
Yeah, 100%. A bizarre decision by the club. Obviously, you know, we've been hearing rumblings that Gombau, you know, simply didn't get on with the players. He was, you know, quite, you know, abusive with them and stuff like that. So obviously, you know, fair enough to let him go, but why in the first place allow him to sign three players before the end of last season? It just, yeah, it hasn't helped Babbel's cause. He hasn't been able to sign who he wanted to. He obviously only could bring in two Germans over the off-season, and then in January, he's done very well to bring in Kwame Yeboah. I mean, he's looked fantastic early on. But, yeah, definite question marks over, you know, the club's decision to allow Gombau to sign those players, and it's really hamstrung Babbel so far. And I think hopefully the club's learned from those mistakes, and you know, they either give Babbel the time now to, you know, really set up for the next few years, or say, look, you haven't been good enough, and call it before it's too late, I guess.
And just a quick one before we go, Josh, with Marcus Babbel, are you pro shorts or anti shorts?
Oh.
I'm conflicted, mate. Another one I'm undecided on. I think his fashion sense overall is very questionable. But it's good to see something different in the stands, I guess.
He looked like he was on the way to a mate's barbecue, Adrian, or maybe just coming back from one and then, you know, off to work.
I don't know. He's a strange cat, but I like him. I think he's great. And I think Western Sydney need to stick by him, because he's got a lot of passion and charisma. And I just feel like the stadium move effect has been diabolical for Western Sydney in terms of how they're performing on the pitch. And I think if you stick by Marcus, they get back into their spiritual home. Hopefully they can bring that colour and that atmosphere back as well. And I think it's just a whole different story with the Wanderers. So I think patience just needs to be implored there, and I hope that's certainly the case. But Josh, thank you for jumping on, mate. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you. And I tell you what, Frosh, that's one of the best debuts we've ever had in the Daily Football Show, I reckon.
Yep, so say all of us.
Very good, mate. I think we'll be giving you a call back.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks a lot, Josh.
You're listening to the Daily Football Show, the voice of Australian football.
Welcome back to the Daily Football Show. Adrian Beaker-Horton with you, Joel Freeby-Frushi and Tony TP2-Pasolia. It was a pretty robust chat in the intro, and Tony, you had some fantastic thoughts. It's time to turn our attention again to the Alan Stajic situation. We've got Cheryl Downs on from the women's game, the chief editor, of course. Welcome, Cheryl.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on the call.
No, an absolute pleasure to get you on in what is an unbelievable situation. Very intriguing circumstances with Alan Stajic sacked. The first and obvious one, Cheryl, for someone that's so close to it, is what was your initial reaction on that crazy sad day?
I suppose it started for Friday night for quite a lot of us, where we'd seen the initial tweet from Tracy Holmes suggesting that something was coming, and more of the point that a press conference was going to be announced. So I think a lot of us spent a lot of the evening, or late night and early morning, looking for that press conference announcement to come through in our mail, but certainly didn't see that until the following morning. From that point, it's been an awful lot of shock. I spent the whole game of the previous W League round sitting beside Stadge and talking football, and then we had him on the Women's Game podcast just on that Monday as well. So it's kind of, you know, had spent a bit of time with him recently and didn't have any inclination that anything was going on. So, yeah, very, very shocked.
Does it kind of make it, I suppose, a bit more shocking, Cheryl, considering it seems, based on all we've heard, that this was potentially simmering behind the scenes for a little while? And, I mean, we don't know the full story, and certainly there's clearly a lot more water to go under the bridge, and, you know, some things are happening, and Stadge is, you know, talking to his people and whatever else. So, I mean, the last sort of 48 hours or so, it's probably only really thickened the plot, I suppose.
Yeah, and I think it's been confusing to see lots of tweets coming out from lots of different people. And I say tweets, but I mean social media in general, that coming out and supporting Stadge. And I think that's great because, you know, he's done a great job for the nation. But I think underlying that, if there are some bits of information that can tell a fuller story, I think everyone, I don't know whether or not we think that we should deserve that, or we do deserve that level of information, but I certainly think that the brand of the Matildas is a very, very strong brand, and this can have an impact to it. So I think it's important to consider the broader spectrum of all of that, but also keeping it confidential. At the end result of all of this, I suppose, is that, you know, maybe we shouldn't just be talking about Alan Stajic. We should be talking about football in its broader Australian sense and saying, is there the right culture around it? And do players and staff and other people involved in it, are they in a safe environment?
Cheryl, it's Tony here. We did allude to it earlier in the show about, I guess, that environment. And I used an example from one of my previous employers in Hockey Australia, who went for a very similar circumstance when they stood down their coach at the previous Olympics, who one of the things about that scenario was that the players were actually brought together and told prior to the media being informed. It almost seems that the FFA acted so quickly on this that they didn't have the time to get the players in a group, and it's always hard when they're dispersed at their W League clubs, but we do have that technology now where we can bring players to the fold quite quickly. Do you think, from a logistical point of view, the FFA may have erred in not giving the players just a whiff of that this was actually going to happen, and it was going to happen at a time, you know, right in the heart of a W League weekend? So was it a case of protecting the players from that, or maybe not giving them enough information?
I don't know if it was taken out of their control. I suppose there's so much that we don't know, so that's, you know, a lot of speculation about what's going on. Certainly something that sounds to me like a legitimate reason is that it was somewhat taken out of their hands, and it may have, I think there was a board meeting on the Friday evening is my understanding, and then something has leaked out somehow. I don't know. That's just what I'm kind of speculating myself. And if that's the case, and it, you know, it was going to cause more damage to not do something very, very quickly, I don't know. So I think that's the problem. I mean, we've sort of been sitting on social media today as well, trying to understand if there's any more information going to come out from whether or not it's the PFA or FFA, someone to come out and give us more information. But I just don't think that we're getting that yet. I do feel that we deserve something more than what we've been given, but I certainly feel that we need to preserve the confidentiality of any of the discussions that have gone through. But I don't think it's fair to Stadge for him to wear something as broad as this at the moment, and, you know, so that people have at least a vague understanding of what's going on. And I don't think at the moment that we're in that position. There's still people asking about Me Too being part of it, and even though I think that was addressed in the media conference, I think there's still enough speculation that it can tarnish Stadge and make it difficult for him and his family.
Yeah, that's a good call, Cheryl. And I think certainly, you know, in some respects, it's probably, you know, very unfair to assume certain things, although, you know, of course, we do consider everything that might happen. But I suppose in terms of legacy, you know, given that there is such a, you know, I guess such a lack of facts at the moment, you know, we can't really sort of speculate too much about, you know, what's going on or how it's going to affect what Stadge is going to leave behind. So we can really only judge it on what he's done so far. And I suppose it's pretty clear, well, it's evidently clear that he's done a terrific job in a football sense for the Matildas and for the women's game in this country, a lot of advancements in that respect. So when you sort of look back on it and what Stadge has achieved, I suppose you must be pretty pleased and pretty happy about the kind of changes that he's been able to bring across in the women's game.
Yeah, I think Stadge has done a huge job, and he's someone who's been really, really authentic about their passion for women's football. You know, he's been dedicated to it as opposed to some people who have sort of immersed themselves in it for a period and then run off to potentially non-women's football specific stuff, so not naming any names whatsoever. So, you know, I think Stadge has been someone who's been there throughout the development over so many years. He's still been involved in the Future Matildas program as well, so that again shows his legacy of bringing youngsters through from, you know, very young ages through the program. So I think all of that is incredibly important, and he's done a great job. You know, there has been some speculation that the Matildas are asking for him to come back, and you know, that's potentially a 1% possibility or not even that much. So now the focus really needs to be on, you know, the players, making sure that they're a strong, cohesive team, and that an interim or a permanent replacement is found for Stadge. And I suppose there's potentially more fallout as well that we haven't seen, but we do believe that they were looking through more of the coaching personnel.
And in terms of, I guess, his football performances of late, I mean, there have been some critics. I think early results last year against Portugal and maybe some of the tougher European opposition probably did show an element of maybe tactical naivety with the way that the team was set up. I think the first game against Chile probably flowed on from that as well. It is a replacement, and you know, it's obviously difficult with just 5 months. I don't think you can go through a global search and get the best possible coach and appoint a long-term replacement. This clearly has to be a caretaker role for the next 5 months at the very least. In terms of what the FFA should be looking at from your own perspective, is it someone who knows the squad really well, who's got, I guess, a handle on the Australian landscape, or do we go overseas and look for someone to maybe have a different impact to what Stadge maybe brought to the table over the last 4 or 5 years?
Can I have both? Yeah, I think both is really important, to be honest, because football's not a short-term game, and you know, I definitely think that the Matildas should be considered as a very long-term proposition as well. I mean, they can deliver results now, but it's, you know, just needing to invest in them in the right way to make sure that they stay in the current sort of ranking that they've got at the moment. I think that's the big thing. We've obviously got a big demand to have a coach in there pretty quickly, given that we've got the Cup of Nations matches coming up in just over a month, I think. So, you know, that's certainly would like to have a coach looking after the Matildas at that point. It'll be a lot of transition for them. The good thing for them, I suppose, as a squad is that they do have a lot of stability within the players themselves. A lot of the players and a core of the players have been there for a good amount of time.
Now, just to wrap up, Cheryl, of course, the W League, very, very competitive over the course of this season, except for Western Sydney, but they got that shock win against Adelaide United, and Adelaide United blew a great opportunity to solidify themselves in the top three. So if you look at it, Cheryl, there's a hell of a lot of teams that could consider themselves a chance at the pointy end of the season. How do you think it's going to play out?
Oh, it's been driving me bonkers, to be honest. I've been trying to go through all the different permutations or combinations that are possible coming up to the end of the season. We're in round 13. We've still got one match of round 12 left to go as well. And I think that is actually quite bad for Melbourne Victory, even though they're sitting on top at the moment. They've got three games to play in the space of what the other teams have got, two games to play at a maximum. So I think that's a really big deal for them. It's tight. I think Adelaide didn't necessarily underperform. They had two key players that were unavailable, and that's because of the international windows. I think they had both of their Icelandic players were unavailable. it's big. You know, there's so many teams that could have an option of getting into the finals, and I think that's what makes the W League exciting. It's a short season, and a little slip can cause a lot of pain.
Now, to keep up to date with the end of the W League season, make sure you head over to thewomensgame.com, and also just to keep tabs on the situation with Alan Stajic and, of course, the great podcast that you've been rolling out as well. Cheryl, we love your work. Thank you so much for coming on, given an interesting time for women's football, and no doubt, like Joel said, there'll be plenty of water to go under the bridge in the coming days.
Yeah, fantastic. Thanks very much, guys.
You're listening to The Daily Football Show, the voice of Australian football.
In by Hector Bellerin. Excellent touch by Lacazette.
Yes. About time you did something. Well done, Arsenal. Good win.
Woohoo!
You played Chelsea off the park in that first half.
I know we did.
Very impressive.
Yeah, pretty happy with that. Would have been great if we could do that away from the Emirates. I mean, imagine if Arsenal only ever had to play on carpet. We'd be like, you couldn't beat us, but apparently we have to travel, which doesn't seem to work very well for us.
No, you do not travel well. How long's it been since you beat a top 6 team away from home?
Oh, too long.
Two, three years?
Oh, it's been a while.
it's a terrible record for such a big club.
Yeah, it sucks.
And it's so embarrassing to lose to your closest rivals.
Mm. It's, what do they call it?
Got to sort that out.
Yeah, I've completely forgotten what the analogy is for that. Flat track bullies. Yeah, Arsenal are flat track bullies. We are the kings of flat track bullies in the EPL. Yeah.
But you're back in the mix.
Yeah, we're back in the mix.
Who knows?
3 points. And yeah, not good news for Chelsea because now two of their biggest rivals are sitting just on their coattails. So very interesting to see what happens at this final four race because United are back in it and Arsenal are still in it as well. But
it's clearly United, Arsenal, Chelsea for fourth spot now.
Yeah.
I think Tottenham are too far away.
Yeah, well, I mean, that 93rd winner certainly helped them this morning.
Correct.
Overnight. Otherwise, if they'd taken the draw with that, I'd say they're still in the equation, but I think they're just safe.
They're just outside.
But it's going to be interesting with no Son and no Addie Kane for the next few weeks.
Dude, it's funny. We're playing FIFA on the weekend. I was down at a mate's farm near Lawn. Beautiful farm. God, I love it down there. And we're playing FIFA. Three of us are very well-versed in terms of playing FIFA. We used to play it religiously when we're, you know, your age, Frush, but we've all matured a little bit more now. And Sam, one of our friends, had never played FIFA ever before in his life.
Did he win? Like, I'm assuming you won.
I played with him. We ended up beating Richie and Josh 3-0, and we had 10 men from the 6th minute onwards. And it was his second game of FIFA ever. And we're just running around the room like little fools. But anyway, the funniest thing of all is we were playing with Tottenham.
Yeah.
And Son scored a goal and my mate's running around like a headless chook celebrating going, good on you, Son. Good on you, Son. And he absolutely loved it because he had no idea how to pronounce his name. Oh. So for the rest of the night, we're calling him Son. So,
well, it still doesn't top the time that's one of my best mates, Ben, and I playing against another mate, Stewie. And we were playing with Barnett and he was using Team 11 and we won. So go Barnett.
Go Barnett. I like it. Okay. Now, let's wrap up, boys, because it's been a big edition of the Daily Football Show. Great work from Tony before with Tony's take on the Alan Stajic situation. Thanks to Cheryl Downs from the World Game.
And the Women's Game.
The Women's Game, of course. I don't know why I said the World Game. Maybe because it's Monday. And also, of course, Josh Thomas. How could we forget the Goal Australia journo with his good, bad and undecided. But before we do go, and I like predictions. I don't mind them. I know a former colleague doesn't like predictions, but I do. And we play Uzbekistan tonight, 1 a.m. Australian Eastern Daylight Time. Boys, what's the score going to be? Let's go around the room again. Big Beef.
6-0. We're gonna do the same thing we did them last time. 6-0.
6-0.
Yep. We're gonna batter them.
Who's gonna score all the goals?
Mabil Bryce. I reckon we'll get one from probably deep midfield, maybe Mass or even Millsy might just pop up for one.
Nice.
Probably one to either J-Mac or Apu, whoever starts. And then I think
Lex, and an own goal,
and then Lexa might chip in, and then just an own goal.
It's probably going to be an OG.
Matty Ryan will probably just go up for a corner just for gags and just head one in.
I like it.
6-0.
6-0. Wow. Okay.
He might have to. In my scenario, I'm predicting a 1-1 draw at full time.
Ooh.
But us to get the biscuits. Yay. In extra time, 3-1.
Wow. Yay. Okay, Joel.
And obviously a 4 o'clock finish just to rub the salt into the wound. So it might be a bit blurry eyed tomorrow morning.
Bastards. I'm going with a 2-0 win. I'm feeling pretty confident because all I've really seemed to have heard out of the Uzbekistan camp is how they wanted to avoid the Socceroos. So I'm feeling pretty good about our chances. And I've got a feeling that Old Action might score one tonight.
Yeah, I got a feeling as well. I think a header coming from deep, Jackson Irvine arriving in the box late, bullet header.
How many times do you reckon he'll get fouled by the referee this time?
quite a bit. Hopefully he doesn't lose his cool. He was pretty good last time. I thought he was going to blow a gasket at one stage, but I think it'll be 3-0 to the Socceroos. I think it'll be relatively comfortable. I think we'll be 1-0 at halftime. We might pull away early in the second and we might get a goal late on. So I'm going 3-0. I'm going on the big beef fight. I reckon we're just going to get it done with ease. I reckon we'll start to purr.
Batter him. Absolutely batter him.
Oh, well, go you, Roos. Don't forget, tune in 4 p.m. Eastern, Monday to Friday, Daily Football Show via iTunes, Spotify, the Google Podcasting app. Let's get it done, Roos. Come on, Jackson.
This has been a Podular Media production.